Support for this podcast and the following message come from Wise, the app that makes managing your money in different currencies easy. With Wise, you can send and spend money internationally at the mid-market exchange rate. No guesswork and no hidden fees. Learn more about how Wise could work for you at wise.com.
Today on State of the World, street protests in Cuba and the World Happiness Report. Thanks for listening to State of the World from NPR. We bring you the day's most vital international stories up close where they're happening. It's Wednesday, March 20th. I'm Greg Dixon. In a few minutes, the World Happiness Report reveals differences between old and young. But first, hundreds took to the streets in Cuba last weekend to protest the lack of electricity and food. While relatively small, the protests are notable in a country that locked up protesters in the recent past. Cuba is experiencing its worst economic crisis since the 1990s. From Mexico City, Emily Green tells us more about the difficult situation in Cuba.
The heart of the protests have been in Santiago de Cuba, on the island's impoverished eastern side. 58-year-old Claribel says there's no food, electricity, water, or transportation. We are withholding her last name for her safety for fear of repercussions from the government. We reached her on a scratchy phone line. The situation here is terrible, she says.
Vivir en Cuba es una tragedia.
To live in Cuba is a tragedy. Cuba's economy began tanking during the pandemic, when international tourism plummeted and inflation soared. During that same period, former President Trump reinstated a range of sanctions on Cuba. But conditions in the country have rapidly deteriorated in recent months. Fuel prices have increased fivefold since the beginning of March. The cost of public transportation has also soared, to the extent there is any. The Cuban government suspended all sports tournaments because of a lack of transportation, and blackouts have become a constant. We don't have any idea what time there will be blackouts, Claribel says. We call the company and ask how long are they going to last, and they don't know. She says the other day she didn't have electricity for 9 hours. The communist government has even started limiting allocations of bread to children and pregnant women. Some critics say conditions are worse than during the economic crisis of the 1990s, a time known as the special period.
I was a kid, but I recall that during the special period, we got a ration of bread daily, every Cuban. Not this time.
Ricardo Torres is a Cuban economist at American University in Washington, D.C. He says Cuba's problems, from food shortages to power outages, are the result of a massive financial deficit. Dilapidated power plants have shut down, and there's not enough fuel to power those still working.
Around 95% of Cuba's electricity is produced by power plants that burn oil, fuel oil, diesel, even crude oil. So if you don't have the fuel, well, you cannot operate the plants.
In other words, he says,
no fuel, no electricity.
Russia is now reportedly sending a massive oil tanker to the island to help address the shortage. On Twitter, Cuba's president said his government will address the protesters' concerns, but also denounced, quote, enemies of the revolution for trying to destabilize the country, and accused the U.S. of stoking the protest. A spokesman for the Cuban government blamed the economic crisis on decades-old U.S. sanctions that have complicated the island's purchase of fuel and food. That's partially true, says Johanna Silano Pelaez with Amnesty International, but not entirely. It's irresponsible to blame U.S. sanctions alone for the state of the Cuban economy, she says. Many in Cuba feel the same. The recent demonstrations are the biggest since 2021. Then hundreds of people were arrested and sentenced to prison, some for up to 25 years. Despite the risks, Cubans are once again taking to the streets. We want food, they chant. The people aren't going to back down, Claribel says. If there hadn't been protest, we would still be without rice and chicken. When she heads out to protest, she plans to bring her granddaughter. They can't touch the children, she says. For NPR News, I'm Emily Green in Mexico City.
The annual World Happiness Report is out. The global survey based on data from Gallup tells us happiness is up in Central and Eastern Europe and down in South Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa. It also found interesting generational differences in happiness around the world. Here's NPR's Allison Aubrey.
If you want to assess your well-being, imagine steps on a ladder. The top rung, think of it as a 10, represents your best possible life. The lowest rung, zero, represents the worst. Considering your current life, which rung would you choose? Thousands of people's answers to this question and countries around the globe form the basis of an annual World Happiness Report. And this year, while Scandinavian countries stay at the top of the list, there's not great news for the U.S. Jan Emanuel Deneve of Oxford University is an author of the report.
We have seen the United States drop out of the top 20. And so what we're seeing in the United States is huge intergenerational inequalities developing.
He says these differences are striking. People 60 and older are actually happier compared to young adults. In fact, the U.S. makes the top 10 list on the global ranking for happiness among the older generations. And Deneve says there's likely a combination of factors to explain this.
The big pressures on life, having small children, a mortgage to pay off, having to make your way in the world of work, those pressures have likely tapered off a little bit.
This is not completely surprising for older people in many countries, especially those with strong social safety nets. But what's changing that's unexpected is that happiness among young people has fallen off significantly. It's not only the U.S., but also Canada, Australia, and to some extent, parts of Europe and Britain.
There's a dramatic decrease in the self-reported well-being of people aged 30 or below. And that is highly concerning because we would expect youth to actually start out at a higher level of well-being than middle-age individuals.
Many factors likely drive this, says John Helliwell of the University of British Columbia. Everything from concerns about climate change to political polarization to social media.
People are hearing that the world is going to hell in a handbasket, and the young especially are feeling more threatened by it.
While many share some of the shame, anger, and strife of modern life, he says what can be helpful to focus on is positive social connections and potential solutions.
That's NPR's Allison Aubrey. And let's focus on our positive social connection with you for a second. If you appreciate our reporting around the world, please consider joining State of the World Plus. For just a few dollars a month, you help us keep doing what we're doing. You can sign up at plus.npr.org or on our show page in Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
On Wildcard, the new podcast from NPR, you'll hear people like comedian Jenny Slate reflect on their lives. What is something you think about very differently today than you did 10 years ago?
Dressing. Like, not salad dressing. I've always loved it and I'll never stop. Dressing my body.
That's all part of the new game show, Wildcard, only from NPR. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Betterment. Confusing eye contact with a mysterious stranger is never chill. But Betterment is the investing app that lets you be totally chill about your finances. Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. This message comes from NPR sponsor Stearns & Foster. Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted for irresistible comfort with indulgent memory foam and ultra-conforming IntelliCoils for your most comfortable sleep. Learn more at stearnsandfoster.com.